Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drinks Show this week. Yeah, happy New Year out there, everybody. It's our first new show of 2019, and I could not be more excited about it. Yeah, it's the kickoff to our French Quarter Fest series. If you've been listening to the show for a while, I've been talking about it for quite a bit. We have partnered up with what I think is the finest music festival on the planet, French Quarter Fest, happening in April, 36th annual, coming up pretty quick, as well as the finest record store in the world, Louisiana Music Factory, located there at 421 Frenchman Street. And yeah, what we're doing is we're interviewing local musicians who perform at the festival, and we talk about music and culture and drink and food, and we usually have two acts together at the same time, sometimes complimentary, sometimes very different. And this is going to be an ongoing series. So yeah, the one coming up here on today's show, this week's show, is the inaugural edition of the French Quarter Fest series. And I'm pleased to tell you that we had two really great guests, R&B and jazz singer Stephanie Jordan, as well as jazz clarinetist Tim Lachlan. And two very, very talented, two very funny, engaging, interesting people. Had a great chat with them. What we do is we tape these interviews at the record store at Louisiana Music Factory. And yeah, you can turn up and watch us do the interviews and ask questions of the musicians if you like and that sort of thing. We'll let you know the next time we do another round of these. Kind of the idea is we'll record a couple shows generally in one go. So we've got another one that's going to air in just a few weeks. And that one will feature Dr. Bryce Miller, who does a new trad, traditional jazz, but, you know, very contemporary, modernized, if you will, as well as Lou Hill and Shalaya Sunchaser from Waterseed, a great new funk band out of New Orleans here. So that one will be coming up pretty soon. So stay tuned, and we're going to do some more. We're going to keep doing this all year round as we continue to work with French Quarter Fest as well as Louisiana Music Factory. Really, really looking forward to continuing to do this. We have a great conversation with these guys coming up. We are going to be spinning some of their music, Stephanie's and Tim's, that is, going in and out of the breaks. Stephanie has got a great new album out that is it's with her big band. And it's a tribute to Lena Horne, the fabulous jazz singer. And so we're going to spin stuff from her exclusively from that album. And then with Tim's stuff, we're going to play a few different things from a couple or so of his different albums, maybe three of his different albums. And one song that we're going to play for sure is The Isle of Orleans. And that's from his 2003 album. But that song was listed as one of the most 300 essential New Orleans tunes as defined, I'll use that word, by Offbeat Magazine, the terrific music and lifestyle culture publication here in New Orleans. So be sure to catch that. We're going to slot these songs in, friends, after the kind of the production. That's the post-production of the show. So what I will do is on our Facebook page, I will let you know what song airs, the little snippet of what song airs before and after each break, if you're interested in checking it out. Of course, I want to be sure to say that you can get both Stephanie and Tim's music there at Louisiana Music Factory. You can go to louisianamusicfactory.com and order the stuff online, or just go visit the record store at 421 Frenchman Street, as I said. And man, Barry and the gang there, Barry Smith, the owner, great guy, friend of mine. They are so knowledgeable. So if you're interested in the music of New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana, that is the place to go, because they are just a treasure trove of knowledge and a great selection. They have music from other parts of the world, of course, all kinds of stuff. They got books, they have DVDs, t-shirts, lots of other stuff going on there as well. It's a really fun store to go visit, but their specialty, of course, is regional music, and there is no finer place to go than there. Quick programming note, friends. Next week on the show, our two favorite beer guys, Sal and Matt, are going to be back. As you know, we usually have them on about once a quarter or so, and we talk about beers. And these guys just know so much about beer, it's crazy. And what we're going to talk about this time is a sort of, you know, seasonal brews like we like to do. So we're going to focus on winter brews, some of the heavier stuff. I'm sure we'll talk about the fact that, you know, half the time in the winter here it's 70 degrees in New Orleans. So what does that mean? What can you drink then? And we'll talk about all kinds of other trends in the industry and different things. Never know which way that conversation is going to go with those guys, but that'll be next week's show. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we are going to come on back with a kickoff to our French Quarter Fest series.
You might hear from far and near a world you've never heard before.
We say Le Bon Temps Brûlée. Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, from the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the third annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 20th through the 23rd. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, Bourbon Plus, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com. Everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show this week. It is a very special show this week, friends. I've been talking about this for a while. This is the inaugural episode of our French Quarter Fest series that we're doing here at Louisiana Music Factory, our good friends. It's a great honor to be paired up with the finest record store in the world, in my opinion, and the finest festival in the world, French Quarter Fest. And it's also an honor to have my two first guests helping me get this started here, Miss Stephanie Jordan. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. And Mr. Tim Laughlin, Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. Walking distance is always best.
Yeah, you're over on Royal, huh?
Yeah.
So this is an easy commute?
Yeah, not too bad.
That's good. Nice cool weather out there.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some different stuff here. We're going to talk about your music, and we're going to talk about your participation in French Quarter Fest, of course. And because the show is about the world of drink and food and culture here in New Orleans and beyond, as we like to say, we're going to talk a little bit about that. But let's start with the music here first. And Stephanie, I'll flip it to you. Jazz singer, R&B singer, and tell us a little bit about your background. How'd you end up in the music world? How'd you end up singing?
Oh, goodness.
I know that's a loaded question, and it could take a while, but we've got some time.
That could really take a while. I actually started singing in Washington, D.C. after college. I was hanging out with my brother, Kent Jordan, who's a jazz flutist. And he was playing at a club called Tacoma Station. And I went down and sat in with the band. And I sang an old jazz tune called I Remember April. And the club owner offered me a gig. After saying that one song. And I started doing a duo with a great jazz pianist by the name of Doug Karn.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that was in the late 80s.
Are you from D.C. then, Stephanie?
No, I'm from
here,
New Orleans.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Were you going to school?
I was going to school. I graduated from Howard University. And I was working, actually, at one of the top jazz stations in Washington, D.C. at the time, Jazz 90.
What were you doing there?
I was a promotions director.
Okay.
So I would meet everybody, and I had free tickets to everything.
So you were a popular person then?
Yeah, with people who wanted free tickets, people who wanted hookups. But, and on the side, you know, I kind of secretly, like everybody else, wanted to get on the stage and sing, but I was afraid. And I did it one day with my brother's band, and I called my dad. He said, "Oh God, don't quit your job!
Right?
Don't quit your day job. Do that and sing on the side."
Now, did you study music, or did you just kind of grow up around it?
As a kid, I played a little of everything. A little piano. I had violin lessons. I played violin for a long time with my sister and brothers, you know. So, yeah, I grew up around a lot of music. My dad is Kid Jordan, who's a jazz saxophonist and retired professor of music. Well, we shouldn't say retired, because he still teaches one class a week and runs a summer camp for kids.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, now what about you? You're a fine clarinetist, and how did you get involved with playing the reeds, man?
Well, I fell in love with the clarinet before I ever owned one. A friend of mine played down the street, and I used to go listen to him play. And he was more of a legit player. I would hold the music, and he would play it. But I was fascinated by how he got a sound and how the instrument worked. So he eventually showed me how to get an embouchure and blow into it and a few notes here and there. So when I got a clarinet, I started playing right away. And then I took lessons at Warlines with a man named Bill Bourgeois, who played with all the greats like Sharky Bonanno on Bourbon Street,
okay.
good tenor man too. When I was in fifth grade, I went to Holy Cross, and that's where I went through high school. And I had a professor there, Frank Menino, who was highly regarded and a good band leader as well, mm-hmm. but good reed man. I took lessons from him as well. So those were my first two mentors.
Okay.
And but when I heard jazz on the radio, I think it was one of Fountain's records, the Mardi Gras record, that sort of hit me. And so I suddenly became an ear player.
Okay.
And playing with the records. So, and when you do that at 8 or 9 years old, you tend to have an advantage to whether you start, if you start in high school or college, because it's a lot like learning French at an earlier age. You hear the timing and the nuances that you would probably miss. Your brain is still soft.
Sure,
and,
right.
And so I just
enjoyed soaking up like a sponge, right?
Yeah, I just enjoyed playing with the records and got more records, and even just started collecting records, and eventually worked at a record store after high school. It was a predecessor to Tower Records, and I did that for about a year.
Yeah.
And,
which store?
This one was called Warehouse Records.
I worked at Warehouse briefly for a while in California.
In Gentilly Woods. Okay. That's where I grew up. And but I had a ball. And then shortly after that, I worked at a television station here in New Orleans, WWL, but still played music. Like I would do the Mardi Gras parades and odd jobs, but I wasn't knee-deep in it.
Okay.
You know, and so when I left WWL, I told my mom I wanted to do music, and she looked at me like I wanted to do ventriloquism. And I said, well, I tell you what, Mom, let's you and I make an agreement. If this works, or if this doesn't work, you can say I told you so. But if this works and I make it music, nobody says a word. And she never said a word. I was able to bring her to Carnegie Hall with me, and we played with the New York Pops in 92, and she was my biggest fan.
That's cool.
Yeah, so anyway, that first thing I did when I left WWL, I joined the union because I kept fighting it and said, why should I join a union? And somebody just said, well, because that's where all the good musicians are, okay? I said, okay, you got me. And the first one to welcome me was Alvin Alcorn, and I never forgot that, and we were friends ever since. And I started hiring leaders as sidemen. And what that did, they were grateful for being having a gig and being a sideman, because every leader wants to be a sideman once in a while so he can relax. But they got to hear me play, and it wasn't a quid pro quo. They could hire me if they wanted to, but more often than not, they would hire me, and that's sort of the way I networked.
Got it.
Yeah.
So that's you join the union to network. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Stephanie, let me ask you this question, because we were talking about your latest record, and we're talking about working with other musicians. You have a big band album out now that's a tribute to Lena Horne, correct?
Yeah, it's it's a large ensemble. It's big band.
Okay, large
sounding.
Ensemble. Okay, it's, right.
Which I think is great. Which is a credit to my arranger Mike Esnault. I should say the Emmy-winning Mike Esnault. Two-time Emmy-winning. He's a wonderful guy. And, before I talk a little bit about that, Tim and I have a couple of things in common, and that we met at WWL television station.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. That's
many, many years ago. I was an intern.
What, you were in radio
yeah,
production?
Television, promotion? Radio, film, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so I was an intern when he was there. And then also, one of my music mentors and really one of the first musicians to introduce me, other than my brother, is my uncle, clarinetist Alvin Batiste.
Wow.
Okay.
So I don't know if you knew my uncle.
I did the jazz camp with Alvin. He called me every year, and it was a lot of fun. And your dad.
So clarinet is a big part of my life, because my uncle would hire me as a singer in his band.
Okay.
And I miss him just dearly. He was just the biggest part of my life. He and my dad were frat brothers at Southern University, so they met in college in a band at Southern University's marching band. And so I love clarinet, and I love the way my uncle played, and I miss him dearly.
Yeah, he was such a unique player, and he influenced so many great players today. As young clarinetist here, Gregory Ajide, Wes Anderson, and it's a bunch I can't remember.
So many musicians. Not just reed players, but just one of my favorite drummers is Troy Davis, and Troy was one of his students. Okay. Troy's played with everybody.
Okay.
So back to the question about the big band. Mm-hmm. Lena Horne came to New Orleans when I was about 17 years old, and she had her one woman show. And my dad, you know, you talk about the union. My dad is one of the early union players. As a matter of fact, my dad, before you had the integrated musicians union, you had the black musicians union. And my father was a member of both. Mm-hmm. And my dad played with the Houston Big Band as well as the Herb Tassin Big Band.
Mm-hmm. And what years roughly are we talking here, Stephanie? Ballpark.
When my dad was playing with those bands?
Yeah.
That would have been, well, say through the 50s, the 60s, into the 70s.
Okay.
You know.
I think I remember him playing the Blue Room as well.
Oh, yeah. He played the Blue Room behind every great singer that ever existed. Frank Sinatra, Nancy Wilson, Gladys Knight. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. You know, I think that was part of my infatuation with being a singer. It's like I wanted to be at the Blue Room.
So was this the kind of thing, so then when people were coming to town and they were picking up local musicians to back them, right?
Is that right.
What? Okay.
Yeah, they'd bring their rhythm section.
Rhythm section, correct.
Maybe their lead trumpet player, and then the rest is all pickup.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when Lena came, my dad played behind her for like two or three weeks. I think she was always here for almost a month. And so we got to meet her, see the show, and I remember thinking, wow, that's what, in my mind, what jazz singing was. It just did it for me, because Lena had it all. You know, she was theatrical, she was beautiful, she was dressed well, she could sing, her arrangements were complicated, the musicians were just tight, everything was just, I mean, she won, like, I don't know how many Tony Awards. She won everything for that show. That show just did it all for her. I think Quincy Jones was her arranger.
Okay.
So she had the best of the best. And the fact that my dad was sitting in that horn section behind her for a month, I just couldn't believe that.
And the thing I remember was her phrasing.
Oh, God, her phrasing
is incredible.
It was
so unique. And how can you not take off of that?
She just had so much. Of course, Lena didn't think she always talked about how she had to learn how to sing. You know, she didn't really think much of her singing. Well, of course, she came up and was around when, you know, Billie Holiday was there you know, great singers like Sarah Vaughan. I mean, you know, she knew that that was some tough competition there.
Right.
But you know, the great thing about that time, that era in music, is that the musicians and the singers really loved each other and they supported each other. They really did. Dinah Washington, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Lena understood where she fit in the realm of singing.
Okay. And I think that's something that we see here in New Orleans, right? It's fair to say that for the most part, musicians are very supportive of each other.
Correct.
And the community is a community.
It's a community. You have to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you have to be, because we need each other. I mean, you know, I always say, you know, I'm nothing without my musicians behind me.
Sure.
I mean, you know, my musicians, and I'm very respectful of all of them, because including my brother Marlon, who's like my lead trumpet player. You know, in my ensemble, I have two trumpets, first and second trumpet. I use tenor sax. And trombone and Barry. Okay. I love baritone.
That's a great sound.
Yeah.
So whenever I have a clarinet player, he's a soloist.
Well, I was just going to ask, have you all ever collaborated together before?
Not yet.
Okay, so we're going to broker that deal here.
You know, there's an old song that says, "The best is yet to come."
There you go. The best is yet to come. I love it. On that note, we're going to take a little break here on the show. That seems like a good fit to do that, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit more with Tim Lauf and Stephanie Dore. We're going to talk about food and drink because we do that on this show too. Take a little break. Oh, yeah. Come on back.
Let someone start believing in you. Let him hold out his hand. Let him touch you and watch what happens when someone.
Hey friends, Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Agave Week is back with its new headquarters at the Ace Hotel in downtown New Orleans. Week-long events kick off Sunday, March 10th with tequila and mezcal tastings, seminars, panel discussions, and one-of-a-kind parties. Visit NOLAAgaveWeek.com for tickets and info. The Grand Tasting is the third annual Top Taco with unlimited gourmet tacos and cocktails from some of the best restaurants in the city. It's happening at Waldenburg Park Thursday, March 14th from 7 to 10 p.m. For tickets and info, visit TopTacoNOLA.com.
Show Brian Diaz here with you. We're chatting with Stephanie Jordan, and my mistake, we are chatting with Tim Laughlin, not Laughlin. I screwed that up, Tim. My apologies to you.
No problem.
Just saying, I whenever I hear people say your name, they say it wrong, so I will now be on a crusade to make sure people say it right.
Yeah, I have it spelled phonetically on my website, but nobody goes to it.
I looked at your website. I missed that part. Okay. Yeah, okay, man. I'm even more embarrassed. I'm going to move right along here, man. And one of the things, you guys, we talk about here on the show is drink and food here on the NOLA Drinks program. And we're in New Orleans, so I think one of the things I always like to say is it's pretty hard to separate food and drink and culture and music, and this all really goes hand in hand, and both of you are natives. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let me throw it to you, Tim, first. Actually, when you and I met for the first time, it was you were eating red beans and rice over there, Two Jags, the second oldest restaurant in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. So that's a good place. We could even start there if you want. But tell me a little bit, you know, like, how'd you grow up with a trend this way, family, cooking, anything like that? Or?
Well, I learned how to cook out of necessity. My mom was not a good cook.
Okay.
God rest her soul. The only thing she made was reservations. But she was from San Francisco and grew up during the Depression, so I'll cut her some slack. But I used to watch cooking shows, and the kitchen would be a disaster when she got home from work, but she never complained because it was a hot meal for her.
Okay.
And that's where I got my love. I just love the technique and the creativity of cooking because you can make it different every time, just like a good solo.
Yeah.
You know, you could say what you want and modify it, and no one knows but you. So that's where I think a lot of musicians love to cook.
It makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
I think that creative aspect and that improvisational aspect.
And to build flavors.
Building flavors. I was just going to say that.
And you're building ideas and you're building momentum in the song.
Mm-hmm.
So it all goes whether you want to – whether you see it or not. It's you know, that's – I think if I didn't play music, I'd be in the culinary world. Probably washing dishes.
It makes sense. Hey, and a lot of people we know, right? I mean, they're if they're getting started in the world of music and they're paying the bills working as a line cook or working as a server, working as a bartender in this town. That's pretty common, actually.
Yeah.
What about you, Stephanie?
Well, the exact opposite experience. My mom is a great cook.
Okay.
And my mom is one of 16 children, and my grandmother was a great cook.
Okay.
And
all from here in New Orleans?
Right here in New Orleans.
Okay.
My grandmom was actually originally from DeLille, Mississippi.
Okay. Yeah.
But my mom grew up here, born and raised in New Orleans. And I, of all my uncles and aunts, they all cook. So I grew up around great food. So Sunday dinners and things of that nature, the food was just incredible. Mm-hmm. Christmas, Thanksgiving, Easter, big celebrations, big holidays, we have great food. From the traditional gumbos.
Okay.
Stuffed militon, marinade, veal, breaded veal steaks. We do a lot of food in my family. Stuffed bell peppers.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Potato salad. We do. I mean, just we. I grew up. I have to exercise just to eat. I'm around a lot of food, and I like to cook.
Now, I was just
going to
say, I mean, was it kind of something where, you know, your mom is cooking, your grandmother's cooking, were you expected to be lending a hand in the kitchen?
Well, yeah, you know, you start as a sous chef, you know, which means that you chop all the onions, mm-hmm. you know, you...
That's even prep cook. That's even before sous chef.
Oh, yeah, okay, you're the prep. I meant to say prep. You're a prep cook.
But there's a technique to that. You
learn,
have to do it right.
Absolutely. You learn to chop your onions. You learn to core bell peppers to be stuffed and stuff like that, and then you get to be an assistant and mix things up and whatever.
Yep.
So we take food very seriously in my family.
You got to do a lot of hand-me-down recipes too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I get a prize for my potato salad all the time, but really my potato salad is something that I sort of changed a little bit, but the basis of it is what my mom taught me.
Okay.
And, you know, in most of the recipes, the traditional sort of New Orleans recipes, I'm still trying to perfect gumbo. My mother really makes gumbo very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sort of, you know, playing around with the basic recipe that I was given to start.
Do you do seafood gumbo, or do you do
seafood and chicken?
Chicken. Okay.
Chicken and sausage and seafood gumbo.
What's your sausage choice in your chicken and sausage?
I'm very Louisiana based. I'm very particular about the. That's my phone going.
That's all right.
Off.
Don't worry
Sorry.
About it.
The kind.
Dreamy.
I forgot to turn my phone off. I'm very picky about sausages that I use in the gumbo. So I tend to use Louisiana products like Manda sausage and. Yep. Why? That's so long.
I really want to talk.
I hope it's not an important call. We're talking sausage here. This is really more important stuff right now, Stephanie.
There's a hot sausage. What is the hot sausage that we use? Mom, she's in the store right now looking at records.
We'll get that answer after the next break.
I do like andouille sausage.
Yeah, okay.
If it's really made well, I like to get one out of Laplace.
Yeah.
That's
where
really,
I get mine.
Yeah, that's really, you know, authentic andouille
Done.
Sausage. You know, you have to really be careful what ingredients you use. Patton's hot sausage.
Okay, sure.
One of the tricks, though, with Patton's is that you have to bake it or boil the grease out first.
Okay.
Like, I'm really, you know, but it's that grease that gives that sausage the taste.
It's the flavor.
But you boil that grease out, and then you can use it. I think with me... learning the product first and how it functions within a dish is key to Louisiana food. Like, people make okra gumbo, but sometimes it's slimy. But my mom taught me how to de-slime okra before I use it. So I understand how food functions and what you need, how you need to prep and what you need to do with food before you actually create a dish like gumbo, how to layer those flavors.
That makes Very all important. The sense in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's to your point, Tim, talking about, you know, every time we're dealing with ingredients, lots of times these are a little bit of moving targets, right? Where, you know, the sausages might be a little bit different. The produce is certainly going to be different every
time.
And
the one thing I have to say, Louisiana shrimp.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
Louisiana seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am a big supporter of Louisiana seafood.
It just tastes better.
What?
Yep.
I can't function in a kitchen and create, you know, what I need to create unless I really know I'm getting the freshest, best product mm-hmm. that's out there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very particular about going to the dock or going to a local, you know, my favorite place to get seafood is Cast Net Seafood out on Haines Boulevard.
We got to get you an endorsement for them and the Louisiana Seafood Coalition.
I'm just really New Orleans, you know. I have my spots that I go to.
Mm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. What about you, Tim? What about you now?
Like, speaking of gumbo, I learned how to make a dry roux when you just sift it in the thing.
Yep.
And shortly after Katrina, I was in Memphis Airport, and I ran into Paul Prudhomme. And I asked him, I said, I like to make a dry roux because it soaks up the oils from the meat. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have the extra oil from the vegetable oil, whatever. And I said, how do you do it without it clumping? And he goes, okay, just add some water and make a paste and then spoon mm-hmm. it in. So it's little things like that. And that's what we talked about in Memphis Airport. And we didn't talk about Katrina or anything. Just talked about food. But I think gumbo is my favorite to make. Chicken andouille.
Chicken
and
andouille,
I like
yeah.
I like a dark and thin gumbo.
Okay.
You know.
So kind of more savory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we just had a house concert at my place on Monday, and that's one of the things that food and music come together, and the last thing that come together is community. So people, it's like a potluck thing.
Yeah,
people come and they pay a certain amount, and it goes to the band, and the band puts on a 2-set concert, but the food and the music is what really warms people up, and it's like an ooh and ah thing. They're not expecting. The experience of a house concert,
mm-hmm.
and so we have like a waiting list for the next one.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a friend of mine from New York who's a trumpet player came in, and I said, "What a perfect time!" So that's kind of coming into fashion now is house concerts, and we have a big enough place to
pick. A salon. To
cool.
Yeah, a salon. That's right.
A salon. Well, let's do this, you guys. We're gonna take a little break here on the show, and we're gonna come back. We're gonna chat a little bit more with Tim and Stephanie. Come on back.
Love can be a moment's madness. Love can be insane. Love can be a life of sadness and pain. Love can be a summer shower. Love can be the sun. Love can be two hearts that flower as one. Doesn't always happen to you. Love.
C'est le bon temps brûlé. Brian Diaz here with the NOLA Drink Show. Yeah, from the city that shares a deep connection to bourbon and knows how to throw a party, comes the third annual New Orleans Bourbon Festival from March 20th through the 23rd. Discover over 150 bourbons and American whiskeys, as well as great food at the Grand Tasting. Check out more than 30 seminars led by industry luminaries, special distiller dinners, and much more. The event is brought to you by Beam Suntory, Four Roses, Brown Foreman, Uncle Nearest, Bourbon Plus, and the Hilton Riverside. More info and tickets at nobourbonfest.com.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening in today. Really having a great time here chatting with Tim Lachlan and Stephanie Jordan, talking about music, talking about food. We didn't really talk about drink too much, but we mostly kind of focused on the food thing. You guys are going to stick around for another shot with NOLA Drinks, which is our podcast-only portion. So maybe we'll get into the libations at that point. But this is part of our French Quarter Fest series. This is our first one. We're here at Louisiana Music Factory. Thanks to Barry and those guys here for hosting us, 421 Frenchman Street, a great record store. 36th annual French Quarter Festival coming up April 10th through the 14th. And you guys excited? Stephanie excited to do it? You've done it a few times, haven't you?
Always excited because the city is excited around this festival.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotten bigger and bigger every year. The interest has gotten bigger and bigger every year. And it's so well produced. And it's always great to just be out amongst the folks. Of course, I'm on the stage, the Hilton stage this year. And Jackson Square. And I've done that stage once before, and I thoroughly enjoyed it because I always like looking up at the cathedral.
Yeah, there you go. That's a nice
setting,
isn't it? Yeah.
Beautiful setting.
Absolutely.
Beautiful setting.
Now, what about you, Tim? Actually, the first time I saw you was some years ago at French Quarter Festival. If I remember right, you were right over here at the Esplanade in the Shade stage. I think.
Might have been Satchmo Fest.
Okay, it could have been.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And who are you? I can't remember who you were playing with. It was you.
Maybe in Connie Jones.
It was you and Connie Jones.
Yeah,
that's exactly who it was.
Sort of collaboration all-star band.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was great.
And then, but I've been at Jackson Square as well for a lot of years. And I like being the first one out because I get the sound man all to myself.
Right.
And I can tweak it just the way I want, and I never have to growl at him. So,
well, let me ask you this question because this would happen in times past. The parade would come in, and lots of times Pete Fountain, who you mentioned towards the top of the show. Now, you had an association with Pete, didn't you?
Yeah, I met him when I was 17, and we were friends ever since. And my 21st birthday was coming up, and I went to see him at the Hilton, and I said, "Have a great walk this year." You know, and my birthday was on Mardi Gras Day.
Okay.
And he goes, "Why don't you come and walk with us?" I said, "Really?" I said, "It's my birthday. That'd be great." And that was my first time. I still have the picture. Big, full head of hair. I had my band jacket on from high school. And,
another thing we might have in common, what day is your birthday?
March 6th.
Okay. So my birthday falls on Mardi Gras Day from time to time.
Yeah, this is really late.
Yeah, you're late when it's really late.
I'm in February.
Okay. You got a better shot than me.
Okay.
Now, see, this is airing on January 7th. When you folks are hearing this, my birthday was yesterday. So,
12th
day of Christmas, and the kickoff to Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So,
happy birthday.
And
thank you. Thank you very much. And that happens every year. It's amazing how that works. But where are you playing, Tim?
I'm at
this time.
Oh, I'll be at Jackson Square on Saturday, 11:15. And I always consider French Quarter Fest the greatest block party in the world because it's free and it's all local bands.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we strive to stay. We usually bring in one big act a year to play at on Thursday night at Waldenburg Park. I forget who we have this year. It should be my job to remember this.
Some of the stuff's still kind of coming out,
and
the official announcement's going to be actually about 3 weeks from when folks are hearing this.
Exactly.
So we can't give away too many trade secrets. I promise.
This is true.
French Quarter Fest that we wouldn't give away too much.
This is true. Yeah, you got my back on that.
Yeah, I got you, man. But it's a great festival. It is far and away my favorite music festival that I've ever been to because, as you said, it's all local musicians.
And local restaurants.
Here's one of my tips if you're listening from outside the area when you come. Tim, you hit on a really key point is because if the weather's not great, maybe it's a little hot and humid, which can happen, or maybe it's a little cold, which can happen, you can duck into one of your favorite restaurants or watering holes, enjoy the heat, enjoy the air conditioning,
and enjoy the food and the drinks.
And we want to make sure that you're out there buying food and drink at the festival, of course, but you can get into, support the local businesses in the neighborhood as well. And all these stages are just sort of woven throughout the French Quarter, which is really a lot of fun. Stephanie, what are you going to be doing? Are you going to be doing with your large ensemble? Is that the plan?
No, although I'm preparing to record again with that larger ensemble, I will most likely have a real progressive band that I'm experimenting with right now.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool.
I'm doing some music is always changing in my head and how I want to express myself. So it'll be a nice size. It'll probably be at least six pieces.
Okay. And you starting to rehearse? You starting to rehearse that now, or is it kind of you working?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
I'm always grabbing some music. Of course, just a few days ago, one of my top influences on my voice and in the way I actually phrase, Nancy Wilson, just recently, the great Nancy Wilson, passed away. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, I did a tribute to Nancy at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. So I was glad that I did that tribute. I probably will pull out a number of my Nancy Wilson numbers some of that material at the French Quarter Fest this year.
Cool. That's something to look forward to. Mm-hmm. So you guys got about 3 minutes or so before we're going to close out the radio portion of the show. Stephanie, tell people where they can catch you, like online, how to connect and figure out when you'd like to see you live.
You can find anything related to me at stephaniejordan.com.
Okay, perfect.
It's always there. Whatever I'm doing.
Stephanie with a P and an H.
Always
want to make sure we're clear on that. Where do you play around town outside of French Quarter Fest typically?
I don't have a regular gig. I did for a long time do a regular hotel gig. I'm no longer doing that. Looking for a new hotel to maybe get involved with on a regular basis.
Okay.
But festivals, small clubs, and always open for private parties, which I'll do one tomorrow night.
Oh, hey, there you go. So catch her on our website, stephaniejordan.com with a P and an H.
Yes.
Tim, what about you?
Actually, to get back to French Quarter Fest.
Yeah, please.
I'm going to play the same show I was supposed to do last year because I got rained out.
Oh, that was on the Saturday.
And I'll be the only one that knows that. Okay. I kept the set list.
You kept the set list? Okay.
I'm going to do the same show and I'll be... Actually, I have a website as well, timlaughlin.com. You can spell it wrong, and Google will fix it. Just put clarinet.
Clarinet. New Orleans.
New Orleans clarinet. And I also have a Facebook page you can sign on to where to post my gigs. I'm usually at the Palm Court on Thursdays, and then I do a lot of Sundays at the Bombay Club.
Mm-hmm.
So those two places are my steadies. And,
good drinks at the Bombay.
Yeah, good drinks at the
Very
Bombay.
Good.
We got something about drinks. Good work there, Stephanie.
Very good.
You got anything coming out, Tim, that we need to be aware of? Are you working on something new?
Nothing. I've been doing some more writing. I wrote a whole album of originals in 2003, and so I want to do that again. So we'll probably pepper those in my shows, some tunes like Gert Town Blues and, things like that, but I want to get back to writing and let my tunes work for me, not the other way.
There you go. That's what they're supposed to do, right?
Yeah. so far, so good.
And I think in both your cases, right, we can find your music here at Louisiana Music Factory, right?
Absolutely.
And if they're running low on supply, you let Barry over there know, and they'll make sure they get more in. Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to close out the radio portion of the show, friends, and then Tim and Stephanie are going to stick around for another few minutes on another Shot with Nola Drinks, where we're going to talk about, I don't know, something, maybe drinks, more about music, all that good stuff. So remember, friends, be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until then, cheers, y'all.
All right, everybody, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Nola Drinks. Yep, Brian Diaz here with you as always. Hope you're enjoying this conversation here with Tim Lachlan and Stephanie Jordan as part of our inaugural installment of the French Quarter Festival series, an ongoing series, friends, that we're going to be doing here on a regular basis on the Nola Drinks Show, something we're very, 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 let me throw one more very, very excited about, and invite you to stay tuned for more episodes as they come along in the coming weeks and throughout the year and ideally beyond. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to our good friends at French Quarter Festivals Incorporated, as well as our good friends at Louisiana Music Factory for helping make all of this happen. We're going to be back with a little bit more of the conversation with Tim and Stephanie right after this brief musical interlude, and then I'll be back with my parting shot. Here we go. All right, everybody, another shot with Nola Drinks. We are here at Louisiana Music Factory, and we're here talking about, well, our French Quarter Fest series that we just kicked off. And thanks to Stephanie Jordan and Tim Lachlan for taking some time out and helping me get this series going. I appreciate it. And folks, thanks for listening in this week, as always. So I wanted to ask you this question. And Tim, you mentioned something about writing originals. And then how do you balance that as far as with your approach of playing originals and then playing covers that maybe people are kind of looking for and playing traditional music and that sort of stuff?
Well, it's kind of like Galatoire's and G.W. Finn's. People go to Galatoire's because they like the comfort of knowing exactly what they're going to get every single time. And then you go to G.W.'s and they're doing something a little off with a swordfish, and then you're excited about both. So you have to temper it with just to pepper in a couple of originals just to make it interesting, saying this is a song I wrote and it means this. And then people, like especially locals, that's probably my favorite crowd. And a lot of people saying the Europeans, but the Europeans have a kind of an arm's distance with originals.
Because they want to come to New Orleans and hear the canon.
Because they want Galatoire's.
They want Galatoire's, right.
Yeah, but the locals get my sense of humor, my writing, my pioneer spirit, wouldn't you say, with originals. And they can connect with a tune like Gertown Blues or the Isle of Orleans. Mm-hmm. And so I always end the show with Isle of Orleans because it's expected. But they're starting to come to me now with their favorites. So I'm playing more and more originals, which is originally my goal, is not to cut out Muskrat Ramble or whatever, but to just to get my identity, my fingerprint in musical community with my sound, which is partly my originals.
Okay. Stephanie, what about you when you're selecting music to play? How do you approach that kind of dynamic, and maybe, you know, here and when you take things on the road?
One of the things when you're a jazz vocalist, people want to hear standards. Mm-hmm. So you cannot erase the standards. Mm-hmm. And so I always do a fair share of standards. But as a singer, if you're going to work, you have to learn to sing a lot of stuff. So one of my big influences, too, is just the R&B. You know, the R&B scene in New Orleans is a big scene. And, you know, I remember some of my first concerts in the park. You talk about going out to parks and having local festivals, was hearing a singer here named Lady BJ. You know, BJ was incredible. And, you know, you want to be diverse. And I also write music, write songs, and I write songs that are more R&B influenced than they are jazz influenced, which is really interesting to me. And I have a young son who is a producer and a writer of rap music, and he and I collaborate.
That's fun. How old is your son?
He's 22.
Okay.
And he's studying recording engineering. He has a small studio at home, and we collaborate. So... But that's one of the things, I think having a dad who is a serious improvisational artist, as well as my uncle Alvin Batiste and his influence on me, I'm open to music. You know, I guess I promote myself as a jazz vocalist, which I am primarily. I'm not a true R&B artist, but I love R&B music and I listen to the great, you know, R&B singers like, you know, Chaka Khan and Gladys Knight.
Sure.
Dion Warwick, you know, these are great singers, and they've influenced me. So
these things happen in a vacuum, right?
Yeah, they don't happen in a vacuum. You know, I'm writing as well, and my next recording will feature about two or three of my originals as well.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's talk about this last question I'll have for you, the last topic I'll have for y'all here is, we were talking earlier about how in New Orleans there's a community in the music community. There's a community in the culinary world, the hospitality world, all that kind of stuff. And one of the things when I've had different musicians on the show, almost exclusively to a person, they had somebody take them under their wing and were a mentor to them. That's a really important part of the music community here, isn't it? That, you know, somebody has helped you along the way, or more than one person's helped you along the way. And then you know, so many people want to then pay that forward. Do you think that's fair? And I mean, how do you, where you are in your careers and where you are in the place in New Orleans music that you hold, how do you view that responsibility?
Well, my big mentor was Connie Jones, because he taught me how to lead a band, and he taught me how to think outside the box when it comes to playing. I mean, he's one of the greatest improvisationalists on the cornet living today. He doesn't play anymore. And then there are influences. And Pete was an influence, because he's the first guy I heard. But I really didn't have that connection like I did with Connie Jones, because Pete had his career going on. And I wasn't able to go to his house or anything like that. But I was able to hang out with Connie Jones and be in his band and him in mine. So he taught me a lot about leading a band and pretty much stay. Now, the five influences were mostly clarinet players.
Okay.
And, I think influences are more important than mentors, because you pick them.
It's a good way to.
And mentors show up in your life, and they show you. Both are important.
They're teaching a lot of things other than music,
absolutely,
right? I mean, they're teaching about life.
But jazz is self-taught, like it or not.
Yep.
You know, and people can show you the way to the lead, but they can't play the horn for you, and they can't breathe for you. You have to do that yourself. They can teach how to improve upon it, but ultimately you got to play the horn.
Mm-hmm.
And can you play or not?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where influences are really important, because that's where you're practicing is listening is practicing. 1 hour practice, 1 hour listening.
1 hour listening, yeah.
Because you're practicing your ear training.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, and are you, when you're looking around, say at the younger generation of musicians, are you tapping a few people here and there that you want to kind of help out and provide mentorship or influence to?
Yeah, there are a few young guys coming up, but not really many on clarinet, because I pretty much sought them out when I was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it should be. You know, I'm not going to grab the kid and say, come here, I'm going to show you.
Sure.
But if he wants to, you know, learn something, I said, come on, Ovo, you and I'll make a pot of coffee, and you and I are going to listen to records and see where your ears go. Do you like that? Do you like that? I can't show them what to play, because that's my playing.
Right.
And they can listen to my records if they want. But not too many clarinet players coming up that are hungry. They're kind of doing it on their own thing. And if they come to me, fine. If not, that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah.
What about you, Stephanie? You mentioned you're collaborating with your son, and you obviously came from a musical family with your dad and your uncle.
Well,
but from that bigger community picture.
I mentor every day. I'm actually a choir director.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
I have a 50-piece vocal group of kids. Grades 3 through 7.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
is this through a school?
It's through a school. Okay. I'm a teacher at Fannie C. Williams Charter School. And I really enjoy exposing the kids to the world of singing. We sing gospel music as well as jazz.
Cool.
And so I just try to give them everything that I was given. You know, I want them to listen to everything from Mahalia Jackson, you know, to one of the great jazz singers here, Jermaine Basil, to Shirley Horn, Lena Horn, Sarah Vaughan. I just expose them to everything, because I had the great fortune of being mentored by musicians.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, my brothers, my uncle, Alvin Batiste. I'll never forget. I'll tell you a quick story. Mm-hmm. My first gig, Charlie Barron gave me my first gig at the Jazz and Heritage Festival, and I was getting ready to go out, and I decided to let the trio play one number before I went out, and my dad was backstage, and he pulled me on the side, and he said, "Hey, remember when they call Nancy Wilson's name, she goes out, not her band. Don't ever do that again."
Wow. Yeah.
And I've never done it again. The band never plays a number before me. When they call my name, I go out.
Right.
So I learned just a lot about, you know, running a band, how to be on a stage. My dad shared all that he knew from, you know, playing behind great vocalists. My dad gave me my first microphone.
Okay.
And on there, another interesting meeting I had backstage with a great singer, Betty Carter. She just, you know, told me, she said, "Hey, Steph, jazz singing is on the job training. The more you do it, the better you get."
Mm-hmm. That makes
sense.
Know?
Yeah.
That's what you, I mean, that's what you got
to
do, right?
You know, there's no, you know, you can practice, listen. You know, I think part of my strength as a vocalist is that I've listened to a lot of great musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And I do listen. And the musicians that I've been fortunate, and I tell anybody, New Orleans musicians are world-class musicians, and I'll put those musicians up against any musicians anywhere
without
in the world.
Doubt. Yep.
I mean,
without a doubt.
You know, without a doubt. And so when I'm performing, and I've had the great luck to be surrounded by some of the best musicians in the world, I just feel so secure, and they teach me things, and they encourage me. The musicians have actually encouraged me more than anyone.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
It is a great thing. It's mm-hmm. an important thing. It's what keeps the culture going,
yeah.
too, right?
Yeah.
Well, Stephanie, one more time, tell people where they can find you online, information
about
your
music. You can find me at stephaniejordan.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Tim, you?
TimLaughlin.com and the Facebook page.
Awesome. Great. And we'll be seeing both of you at the 36th annual French Quarter Festival there, presented by Chevron, I'm always supposed to say, apparently. and it's going to be a great time. So make sure you come out and catch Stephanie, catch Tim, both of you. It's a pleasure to speak with you both. Thanks for taking
great
the time
to be, with
to be
you.
On the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Friends, after this brief musical interlude, I'll be back with my parting shot. Special shout out to my good friends here at Louisiana Music Factory, Barry Smith and the gang, 421 Frenchman Street, the greatest record store in the world. Come check them out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening in this week to the NOLA Drink Show. Really appreciate it, friends. Hope you enjoy this kickoff installment of the French Quarter Fest series. Really look forward to doing a lot more of these in the coming weeks and hopefully beyond that. So stay tuned for more as we roll them out. And other note, whenever we tape these at Louisiana Music Factory, you're always welcome to turn up and watch us do them. And you get a chance to interact with musicians. They're always hanging around after and ask some questions and some things like that, do some shopping, and come check it out. So feel free to stop by, watch our Facebook page and announcements here on the show for when we're going to be doing the next round of recording. I have a feeling it'll probably be next month in February. That's the guess right now. Quick programming note, friends, next week, the show coming up here, bringing back our beer experts, Sal and Matt, Sal Mortilaro and Matt Horney, of course, two walking encyclopedias of brews, as I like to say. And we're going to talk about winter beers and some other things. We always go off on a bunch of tangents, but it's always really, really interesting. So if you're into beer or kind of getting into beer or don't even know if you like beer, but maybe you want to discover more about beer, we're going to talk about beer. And these guys just know a ton. So I invite you to tune in and check that out on next week's show. Friends, here's our parting shot. Yep. The 36th Annual French Quarter Festival is coming up April 11th through the 14th. It has grown to become, really depending on the year, the largest free music festival in the U.S. Now, in recent years, every once in a while, Simply Hardly Bluegrass out there in San Francisco has a similar number of people, so it kind of vacillates a little bit. But the point is, it's a large free music festival here in the U.S., one of the largest and often the largest. The important thing, though, is that it actually remains true to its core. It features local musicians here from New Orleans and Southeast Louisiana, and they are always front and center at this festival, unlike really anything else of this scale anywhere else. It showcases the reach and resonance that New Orleans has, and this event continues to be a centerpiece of that dynamic and leads that charge. The festival started as a means to get locals back into the French Quarter after a major sidewalk and infrastructure improvement project nearly 36 years ago, and it has now become a world-class music festival. So who knew way back when, in 1984, really 1983, when then-Mayor Dutch Morial first floated the idea for the inaugural French Quarter Festival? It took place in 1984. Who knew where it would be today?
Let's digress a little bit. Back then in 1983, 1984, there was a 14-week project that saw the French Quarter undergo $7.2 million worth of work, primarily fixing and replacing sidewalks, and it was a barrier. It kept locals from going to the neighborhood. Sounds kind of familiar today with some of the street stuff that goes on, but really does have to go on Bourbon Street, for example, and other things. But this festival way back then was seen as a way to draw locals specifically back to the French Quarter. The very first fest actually only featured a single main stage in Jackson Square with small performances on Royal and Bourbon Streets. It was emceed by Ed McMahon. There were breakdancing and flash dancing competitions. There were mimes and other attractions, some of which still remain today in some form or another and many that don't. Here's the kicker. It drew less than 1,000 people by most accounts over the original three-day festival. These days, it draws upwards of 750,000 people, especially when the weather is good for the 4 days that it goes on. It features more than 20 stages. It employs 1,700 local musicians and brings an estimated economic impact to the city approaching $200 million, including nearly $16 million in tax revenue for local and state government. It is now also rapidly becoming a world-class food event. It features dozens of local restaurants and other vendors serving up food and drink to hungry and thirsty festival goers, local restaurants and local vendors, I should add, on the food side. The festival continues to be a centerpiece of celebrating our local culture and now attracts not only locals, as I've said, but folks from all over the globe. It is truly a global event. Now, as you know, here on the NOLA Drink Show, we talk a lot about culture. We make the point that drink and food are frankly inextricably linked to our culture, just as our music, architecture, art, and many other things that we find in and around New Orleans. For example, one need look no further than the numerous references and a sense of place that we find and we find in our music, including references to our love of food and drink. So much music here in New Orleans talks about our love for food and drink, talks about our sense of place. And the city of New Orleans and its environs resonate in the background of the music. You can feel it, frankly. I always make the point here on the show that you can't really separate these things. Food, drink, culture, music, all of this stuff, architecture, as I mentioned. It's really a tapestry, as I like to say. And I also like to say that you really can't pull a thread, because if you pull one thread, it's really going to all come apart. Here on the show, we talk about many of the dynamics of this, some of the ramifications of this. We talk about the importance of the cultural tourism to our economy in New Orleans, for example. Frankly, it is our economy. And that economy and this aspect, it's built largely on the music and hospitality industries. I ask you to reference our show from December 10th, for example, and we'll have more shows ongoing talking about that very topic. This importance, this dynamic, this idea, it is ingrained and integrated as an aspect of our culture. It's ingrained and integrated in our economy, as I'm saying, and it is ingrained and integrated, of course, in our identity. It is what makes this place unique, our flavor, our spin, our take, how we view these things, how it's a part of everything that we do. That's what makes New Orleans so unique. On a side note, it's also why we're in the process of changing our tagline here on the NOLA Drink Show. Before, it was exploring the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. And now, as we move forward here in 2019, it is exploring the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. I think it fits. I think it reflects the show. It's what we talk about, and it's what we'll continue to talk about in broader and broader ways. All of it, of course, being very tied together. It's not a stretch. We're really not changing a whole lot of what we do. It just fits really, really well. It's also why we're proud and honored and humbled, frankly, to partner with French Quarter Fest, the finest music festival in the world as far as I'm concerned, and Louisiana Music Factory, the finest record store in the world also as far as I'm concerned. Both entities are key guardians of our culture, and we're really proud to work with them to present to you our French Quarter Festival series here on the show, this episode, and all the ones that we do moving forward. Again, it just seems to fit, and it feels right. If you're a new listener, welcome. We hope you join us for this series and the show in general moving forward. And if you're already a listener, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being a supporter and listening to the NOLA Drink Show for the past 2.5 years or for however long you've been listening to it. And we hope you continue the journey and exploration with us. Hey, and if anything, we also hope to see you at the festival in April, and we'll be hanging around the record store at Louisiana Music Factory too. You can catch us there. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.